We're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Expect Casey to try to put a little something extra on the slider here.
Sun comes out from behind a cloud, and suddenly we have sunshine covering the infield. A 1-2 pitch to the plate.
Swing and a miss! He struck him out! He struck him out! He struck him out! Aggies are going to the College World Series!
Yes, Dave, the Aggies are headed back to the College World Series. Welcome back to the Red Ass Podcast, guys. What a fun weekend. That was certainly something.
They went out and they did exactly what we hoped they would do. Exactly. You know, that was it was a fun series, but we got a lot to get into concerning what happened, what all happened in the series.
Absolutely, we need to. So I am Rob White, fighting Texas Aggie class of 2014.
And I am Roy May, fighting Texas Aggie class 2015. And to start it off, we're going to go back through our bracket predictions.
Yes, let's go ahead and do that. Good start.
All right. The left side of the bracket, we both went chalk, and it went chalk. That was honestly, if you were a betting man, if you could have placed bets on the series, you could have won some money just based on the fact that even if they were the odds-on favorite, they were no-brainers. I mean, UVA, I thought the left side of the bracket was a no-brainer. Let's see here. So on the right side, you had Oregon State beating Kentucky,
which did not happen. Kentucky,
yeah, I had Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
You said Oga was going to get through.
They did not.
I had NC State.
There you go.
You said Clemson was going to get through.
They did not.
I had Florida.
Yeah.
We both had the Ags in too. So if you'd have bet on both sides of the bracket, Rob, you'd have been like Seinfeld. You'd just been Mr. Break-Even.
That's okay. I mean, like I said, at the end of the day, based on the matchups, I was thinking. One thing I will say, Kentucky absolutely went out there and did a great job. Clemson, my goodness. For anybody who watched that game, I apologize for the ump show that you were – unfortunately subject to. That was
we're gonna get into that. But the Oga NC State series, that was one I think that was really a coin flip. I think I just ended up picking NC State. I felt like they were hot, but you want to talk about a tale of two teams in that series.
No question. I mean, you had NC State come out and really look the part, especially the first day. And then, honestly, day three, they came out and just smashed. But, I mean, it just proved what we were looking at with Georgia for most of the season, which is that if you can work around the guy,
yeah,
you know, you can beat him.
Well, and I haven't watched a ton of NC State baseball this year. To say that means that was the first time I've seen them this year.
Yeah.
Maybe I caught him in a regional just because I was binging college baseball, but you know, I might have flipped through him at one point.
Sure.
But they've got some mashers on their team too. NC State really impressed me. Because Charlie Condon isn't the only guy you got to work around, you know, with Georgia.
Right.
And so I thought NC State, it's impressive, except for like the second game. They got their doors blown off. I mean,
yeah.
Whoever won the games in that series just beat the tar out of the other team. So it was a really goofy series. And again, you know, Georgia doesn't have the caliber lineup that a Tennessee does, that A&M does. I don't know. I don't know if they just mentally switched off the second game or what, but it was impressive what NC State did in the third game. They put the pedal down, and anytime Georgia, you know, was able to score, NC State was able to turn around and answer it right back. NC State looked really good. Again, like I said, I haven't watched them all year, but they looked really good. They got a bunch of dudes with power.
Yeah. The series honestly reminded me a lot of A&M when we played Florida State back in 2011, because that series was really interesting in the terms that it went three games, but all three games were blowouts. Like, A&M won the first and the third game in absolute blowout fashion. Meanwhile, Florida State absolutely blew us out in game two. So it's just kind of the weirdness of baseball, the things that we love about it.
Yeah, but that was a fun series to watch if you didn't have, you know, any stock in the outcome.
Yeah.
Florida Clemson, man.
Yeah.
What an absolute crap show for the umpires. Yet again, I might add.
Yeah, I mean, right from the get-go, I mean, you had the initial situation, which takes 18 minutes to come to determination. And at the end of it, it wasn't even the two guys that started the fight. It's the one guy that came in super late and put a hand on the umpire.
Well, and he grazed him, and it wasn't intentional. And quite frankly, if you were going to eject anybody, you should have ejected both the hitter and Cags or nobody.
Yeah, exactly.
Either do it both, because the hitter kind of lowered his shoulder, but then Cags shoved him back. Now, to me, it's just warn both dugouts and play baseball.
That's what it should have been. It should have absolutely been warnings both benches. Let's keep moving, and that should
and keep seconds. It real tight. You know, honor that warning. Yeah, keep it tight. Like, I'll toss the next dude that gets a little dicey.
Yeah,
but the fact that they ejected the guy that was rounding third once he was, it didn't make any sense because he was out, right, and the inning was over. In which case, they said he left his position. He has no position. The inning's over.
Exactly. It's a silly rule.
It was absolutely asinine. And yet again, I mean, I guess they've improved from the Mississippi State fiasco, but yeah, because it only took him 18 minutes. But that was just yet another example of just poor umpiring. It just, you have to, look, you got to call balls and strikes, you got to call outs. I get that. But you've also, like, you're an umpire. Your job is to control the game. That's your job, right? You don't make it about yourself, but you have to keep the game under control. And those umpires just had absolutely no idea what they were doing. And between them and it's not just on the umpires, it's on the review crew, you know, the replay crew that poured over it, just looking for somebody to throw out. Cause that's what it felt like. It's like they were just looking for somebody that they could toss.
Yeah, it certainly seemed that way. I'm not sure what they were really thinking there, because the entire situation was absolutely insane. And frankly, I feel both for the players and the fans, because everybody's sitting around just with their hands in the air, like, what is going on? And all you really end up doing is causing the Clemson fans to get more agitated, more irritated. And it just,
well, and the Florida fans, because then they're chirping at each other in the stands. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, it put a lot of juice in that ballpark.
No question about that.
So from my perspective, once the game actually started, you know, they started playing baseball again. Heaven forbid we do that. Just every time Cags came to the plate, when Clemson hit a homer, like shortly after that, I mean, there was that ballpark was juiced, and it hadn't been leading up to that because Florida was playing pretty well. I mean, granted, it wasn't like a blowout or anything, but it just seemed like Florida was kind of driving the narrative, and the Clemson fans were kind of getting restless and looking for something to cheer about.
Right.
Tell you what, you do that though, and against a guy like Keck, so like any other pitcher, it's kind of a big deal, but when it's that dude, it's a huge deal, right?
Right.
So,
well, all I can say for that is, I mean, obviously, congratulations, Florida, for, you know, getting through and making it to the next level, and that set up our opponent. And that was the thing that was so intriguing about that game, was with the amount of crap going on. If there were going to be potential numbers of ejections, how many of those would have affected our matchup? So, there was a lot to keep up with in that game. So that was certainly where my eyes were.
Well, and given the rules of being ejected, I was 1,000% rooting them to eject Cags, just, you know, for my own selfish reasons.
Oh, yeah, definitely for our selfish reasons as Aggies. We definitely don't want to see him. But, sets up for a really interesting matchup for sure. So looking forward to that. But
yeah, that's the one thing. You know, Omaha's a big ballpark. Yeah, and so you got to play – I don't necessarily want to call it small ball. But you just have to play, you know, hit to contact, move ducks around the pond kind of thing, because it takes out a lot of the juice, you know. And there are days where Omaha will get hot and you know, you'll see some balls flying out of the park. But it's a big park, so it's helpful for pitchers. But that doesn't matter to Cags, man. That dude hit a ball that's the longest ever tracked by StatTracker, like ever. Mm-hmm. This guy absolutely uncorks on pitches. So it – he's a guy, he reminds me of Charlie Conner in the sense that if he gets you for a solo dinger, so be it. But you absolutely have to make sure that you take care of business in front of him in the lineup so he doesn't have people on base, to where one swing of the bat all of a sudden really does change the game.
Yeah, limiting potential damage, right? I mean, that's what you have to do with big guys in the lineup like that. And, you know, when you've got multiple guys like that, you know, it's definitely tough to work around. But when you've got really one guy that you can point out and say, we for sure don't want this guy changing the game, you know, it makes it a little easier to play around. But you still have to keep in mind, of course, with the joys of baseball, you never know who's going to be that guy in that moment. But I'll get into that in a minute.
Well, and Florida's got plenty of dudes. They do. You know, their catcher is fantastic. Florida's not just Cags.
No, and we were talking about this. I mean, we've talked about it every single year, but when it comes down to this time of the year, the most important thing, the absolute most important thing, is being hot at the right time. And this Florida lineup is plenty hot, and they've been very good. Yes, you sneak into the tournament, but so did Ole Miss in 22. So it's one of those deals where, you know, we don't need to take Florida lightly at all as a team, and I highly doubt we will, because we've seen them before. We know what they're capable of.
Well, and if you look at this field, I don't think there's any one specific standout that just has completely distanced themselves from the pack.
Sure.
So it's all good competition. Like, these are all good baseball teams. I'm thrilled that UVA and UNC are playing each other so they can, you know, take care of each other.
Yes.
Somehow.
Of course.
But yeah, the first game on Saturday is absolutely huge. Sorry for all y'all that bought George Strait tickets. But that first game, and honestly, it doesn't matter if it's Florida or otherwise. You know, the first game in Omaha is so big just because you set yourself up so much more positively for pitching. Mm-hmm. And man, do we need to set ourselves up positively for pitching. So if Prager was going to have a bad day, I'm glad he had it when he did.
Well, because especially having it as badly as he did with the help he had behind him. Because if anything can happen, like if you're going to have a bad day, like you did, if you can turn around – and say, all right, cool, limited damage, toss it out, it's done, move on.
Yeah, flush it.
So
yeah, you got to flush it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, yeah, obviously I think that's the worst outing I've ever seen out of Prager. I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, but, I will say for Oregon, just for a second, I mean, give them credit for the strategy. They just came out and mashed it initially. They came out and attacked, and it really worked for them. And you know, it threw us off our game a little bit. We started pressuring a little bit early. And
yeah, they play a very Pac-12, rest in peace, Pac-12. They play a very Pac-12 style of ball, just attacking. They're not necessarily going to have a whole bunch of mashers, but they're going to attack, they're going to bunt, they're going to run. Oregon played, I think, the game we expected them to play. And they got to Prager, and it happens, man. And I'm glad it happened then, and maybe not, you know, hopefully not this Saturday. But then again, you know, my goodness, Chris Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, what can you say? What more can you say about that guy right now? So he is absolutely, you talk about somebody we absolutely need to stay in that groove. Because, you know, obviously second game, we all saw it. Shane Sadeo goes out 11 pitches in and he pulls himself.
Yeah,
now, this wasn't anything from the dugout, and so there's obvious concern there. From what I've heard, he's done. You know, obviously Braden's done. I'm not going to get into the should Cam have sent him, should he have held him. My only complaint about that, and it has nothing to do with an injury. Injuries like that are just so freakish and they happen.
They do.
And I'm thrilled that it's a clean break.
Yeah,
just because that's a much faster recovery for Braden.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a major league career staring him in the face. My only complaint was it looked like he stopped him and then he sent him. Like there was indecision. So my only complaint was the indecision. That was it about that one. That nothing he did had anything to do with Braden getting hurt.
Not. Yeah, it's unfortunate that there was a bit of hesitation there, but at the end of the day, everything that happened with Braden, I mean, that was just a freak accident. There's really nothing you can do.
So gross. I can't believe they showed the replay in slow motion too. Right as I looked back up, I was like, bleh. I'm like, come
they
on,
always
man.
Always do this.
Football.
They always do this. And I'm like, at some point, you have to understand that, yes, there was a break. No, we don't all have to see it.
Yeah, no, I'm good. When they put somebody immediately into an air cast, I know.
Yeah. And that so, was and I do feel for him because he has been such a important piece of this puzzle. And Sadeo both. I mean, both of those guys.
Well, and not just on the field either. You know, he's the consummate professional. That's why I think he's going to have a really long career. You know, hopefully all of his recovery goes well and he can get right back in it. I saw some pretty short timelines, which, you know, at my age, you could quadruple those timelines probably. But, you know, he's a young man in great shape, probably the best shape of his life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was unfortunate. I just didn't like the indecision, but it had nothing to do with the injury. And I'm sure, and I think Schloss said it too, nobody feels worse than Kane does. I get it, man.
I can only imagine how he feels about it. And I know we haven't gotten a statement or anything. And frankly, we don't need it because we
I don't
know.
need it. No, what Schloss said covers it for me. It does. I think I'm allowed to question whether or not like the indecisiveness was obnoxious, but I'm not going to sit here and say that that's why Braden got hurt. It's just whatever, man. but Aiden goes out second game, which is it ends up being a legendary game.
No
But
doubt.
back to Shane Tadao. Now we're down, right? So we have Prager right now, pretty much. So I want to talk a little bit about the pitching once we kind of get through the game two thing. But game two was it was weird, man. It was stressful, and it was yet another one of those games where I don't have my bubble gun very far away from me, and honestly, I'm not concerned as I'm watching the game. It was weird. Like you felt like they had it in them. You felt like they were going to be okay. It started getting a little tight, a little pucker factor, and then the blow up inning. It was it four walks and a hit by pitch, five walks and hit by pitch, something like that. It was
So
a
going
lot of free
down.
passes all in a row, all with bases juiced. And then in perfect baseball postseason fashion, Caden King gets to the plate.
And what a moment for Caden Kent. I mean, you're coming in here as the backup. And you've had significant at bats this season. It's not like we haven't seen Caden Kent in the lineup, but he comes in a really tight spot in terms of what we need offensive production wise. And in an inning where we kind of, I won't say, well, I'm not going to use the word regress, but we went back to an attack style that we used a lot in 22 is where we were extremely patient at the plate and waited for them to throw something because we realized that this guy was off his game. You need to make him pitch. And eventually, he gives you the meatball, and that meatball gets launched and it turns into a legendary A&M moment.
Well, yeah, and like you said, and in the meantime, he's not hitting the strike zone. So, like, you have got to make him make his pitch. I thought Jace's at bat was a great at bat because
Very good.
I know all he's thinking about is hitting the train tracks, you know. So the patience that the batters had, you know, leading up to Caden Kent, man, it was a ton of fun.
I mean, just looking back at that inning right now, I mean, I've got the numbers up. Lavalette walks a run in. Then Schott walks a run in. Ted Burton gets hit by the pitch. Then Sorrell walks, which scores a run. Then Camarillo walks and scores a
Then
run. Then
Ollie.
Kent comes in and launches. So it's crazy.
And I love Ollie, but Ollie has had a tendency to chase in big situations. And it feels like with Ollie, the down and in breaking ball is his undoing whenever he's behind in the count. So I know that also felt great for him to be able to be patient, take the walk. You know, just sometimes leaving the bat on your shoulder is okay.
Well,
There were a
especially in a
couple of.
situation like this when a pitcher can't make his pitches.
And absolutely, I'll echo everybody's sentiment. Absolutely shocked that that dude was still out there. And it's not even that he was just out there. It's like, didn't have anybody warming up, man.
Well, and it makes you wonder what Oregon really had, and or maybe what the strategy was in the coach's head. I truly don't know because knowing that's one thing I will give Schlossnagel since he's been here. He has done a very good job of not leaving somebody in there at any point. Like if he gets to the stage where it's like, okay, we need something to change, he will change it.
I think one of my favorite things is watching him pull pitchers in the middle of counts. He's like, "You're done. I'm not letting you get through this next batter." I think he's got a great intuition for that. And like, you know, like you said, we don't know what Oregon had, you know. But and obviously, you know, the next guy came in. You know, it's not like that pitcher did it all. The next guy that came in is the one that gave up the bomb. He gave up a walk and a bomb. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know where Oregon was pitching wise. So, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and blame their coach just because I don't know, you know. But however it worked out, it worked out.
It absolutely worked out. And I mean, led to an incredibly fun moment and something that we as Aggies will hold on to for a long time because it was a legendary moment the entire game. Just honestly, this whole series, because you have had nothing but adversity thrown in your face from the beginning of this series and immediately got put in bad spots. But as I said on Twitter, and I said I was going to bring it up on the podcast, the team reminds me of Rocky Balboa at this stage of the game. You know, they're not perfect. You know, they're not super polished at the moment, but Lord, can they take a hit and stand back up? They can absolutely keep coming if they need to, and they've proven it.
It's a mentality thing with this team. We've talked about it all season, you know, and it's also from the fan side. Like I said earlier, you never feel like they're going to lose. I mean, and they didn't do a whole lot of it all year long to begin with, but
also still undefeated in non-conference.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, that is, and now, you know, you didn't play, you know, kind of a bus ride team.
No, this was a very good Oregon team. And honestly, yeah, I mean, a 2 seed for sure. Team that comes in here, really at this stage of the game, any team that's at this level is going to compete. And you saw it with Evansville, you know, a team that was a 4 seed that goes into Tennessee and takes them to Game 3. Granted, Game 3 doesn't go very well. Evansville eventually ran out of pitching and everything fell apart, but they had enough talent to at least, you know, put a scare into Tennessee. And Oregon had plenty of talent to put a scare into us at times. And so, you know, we win this series, yes. And we won it in 2 games, just like we thought. But it was no walk in the park.
No, but I will say, and I know that they have a full week to recover, but you're so late in the season. Everybody's so tired. It's just part of it. Being able to avoid that 3rd game, especially knowing where we're at with pitching. And I know that they're, you know, rotating stuff on the fly, but now you've got a week to kind of think through it, you know, getting ready for your run in Omaha. And so I couldn't be happier that they did it in 2. Even though again, like that 1 extra day, you've got a whole week of recovery, but to me, a lot of it's just mentality and giving Schloss and Wiener an opportunity to reset kind of almost their pitching lineup, you know, because now you've got to. And we've been in these situations, you know, throughout the year. Yeah, you know, the SEC regular season play, it'll grind you down. And sometimes, you know, they'll jump all over you, and all of a sudden you're scrambling to figure out what your pitching rotation is going to look like the rest of the weekend. And so they've done that. It's just now they've got a week really to kind of settle in and figure out what they want to do.
Well, and not just the pitching lineup, but also the batting lineup, because those guys, when we saw the first kind of major shakeup to the lineup, you know, with this, you know, after Braden went out, and you've had to, you know, we will probably make some adjustments with that going into Omaha, which does change up a lot of strategies that maybe Florida brings to the table. But at this stage of the game, you know, we know what's in front of us. We know what we got to do.
Yeah, and it'll be a tale of, you know, tale of two teams, whether you win the first one or you lose the first one. Because that, like we said, you know, that really puts a strain on what is now a much shorter depth pitching rotation.
Yeah.
Just because he was a true number two.
Mm-hmm. And now we're at a point where we are sitting here with basically a regional setup, and you're going to have to face off against Florida, and then we'll take on either NC State or Kentucky after that. And yeah, we'll see what kind of shakes before the final. And I will say this, if I had to pick a side of the bracket to be on right now, it's probably this one.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Yeah, that's tough on that side with UNC and UT.
Yeah.
That's brutal. And look, it's revenge tour season, baby. We get Florida. And this was that first weekend where we entered, you know, we came out of the first weekend in SEC play, and we were like, wait a minute, I thought we were good at baseball.
Yeah.
You know, you're on the road and get swept by Florida, and then we see Florida kind of play like crap. You know,
we took a game. We took one game.
Oh, no, that's right. Yeah, yeah. We took one game. Yeah. But
first game we've ever taken in Gainesville.
Yeah.
Which is
I would have liked to take 2, but I think there was some apprehension coming out of that Florida series.
Yeah.
Just because the way we've been mashing and beating up on everybody, and then we go hit Florida and then we see how Florida's playing afterwards, and your concern is, well, maybe Florida's not as good as everybody thought they were, which means how good are we? Right. But obviously we followed that up with fantastic play in conference play and, you know, the continued non-conference dominance. Yeah. I'll be interested to see how they deal with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've got Rudish. You obviously have Cortez. You got Johnson.
I mean, hopefully Ashenbeck. I want to see Moss kind of.
Yeah, he was a name that I thought a lot about. You know, Weston Moss being a Rudish role. Get him out there for three innings. Let him get through the lineup once and have time. Then go ahead and pull him. He's got some heat. I wouldn't mind seeing Eldridge out there.
Sure.
He certainly needs to be on the roster. Badmiev, Zane. I was reading something. I think Omaha sets up well for him because it's a deep park.
Right.
So he could be a key cog. You always talk about, you know, the unsung heroes that come out of nowhere and step up in Omaha.
Yeah.
You know, maybe for us, that's coming out of the bullpen as opposed to coming out of the dugout.
I truly think that's where it's going to come from, because we have the offensive capability. Like, yes, Braden Montgomery going out is absolutely a pain, but let's look at the last several series. He had not really been up to the same level that he had been previously. He was showing that he was trending back up, especially by the time we got to the end of that Louisiana Lafayette game. But even so, with him out of the lineup, it's not like we're missing a ton of the production we had been seeing. A lot of that's been Appel. A lot of that's been Schott recently. A lot of that's been Ted Burton lately. So I love the fact that this middle section of the lineup really started picking up the slack. And the moment that Gavin and Jace really lock in like they were playing early in the season, oh my goodness. At that stage of the game, I'm just going to be really concerned about the pitching. That's going to be our one real concern. So hopefully so that we can see one of these relievers, one of these middle relievers comes in.
Or a couple of them.
Yeah, you know, I'm not opposed to that. Just come out here and do your thing.
If we're going to make a deep run, our lineup is what it is. If we're going to make a deep run, our heroes are going to have to come out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned about Prager. It's a blip. It's not like we've seen him in a gradual decline over the last month and a half.
Right.
That hasn't been the case. So,
And you know what's on his mind, because he lost his game with Florida. So you got to think that he's probably in the mindset that he wants to come out here and get a little revenge himself.
Yeah, well, and hopefully that doesn't cause him to overthrow. You know, the nerves of the first game.
It
certainly happens to the best of them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, looking at the stats here, but yeah. That's certainly a game that I would like to see Prager come out and do a really good job. Fingers crossed.
I'd love six full, even for like 5 2/3, six full. Give a, you know, if he can get out there and give a quality start and hand it over, you know. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of quick numbers heading in. I checked a couple different websites. So yeah. MGM. So all three sites I checked had Tennessee as the favorite.
Sure.
MGM's got a +250 and we're a +300, so not a whole lot of difference. It's not much different with DraftKings. Tennessee's at 290, we're 330, and right. Then FanDuel's got the same odds. FanDuel had Kentucky at the highest, or no, excuse me, DraftKings. I think I had them at 330, so or maybe 430. I don't know, but Kentucky's kind of right in there. But those are your three favorites as far as Vegas is concerned.
Yeah. So this is fascinating. So I went back to look at the stats for this Florida game, the first one. So Prager only went 2 1/3, giving up 7 hits with 6 runs, all earned, with only 1 strikeout. Meanwhile, Cade Fisher, who was their starter in that game, he goes 6 innings, but also gives up 6 hits, 6 runs, all 6 were earned. So, I mean, we can hit this lineup. We know we can hit this lineup. We just, if Prager's on it, I think we'll be okay.
If Prager's on it, he's one of the better pitchers in the nation. All right. Yeah. Like that's not, you can't question that. So no. The biggest thing is just, you know, hopefully he can find his groove. I can't wait for this game. I really, really am looking forward to it.
And the Saturday night slot, which is honestly, if we're talking like in prime time, it's going to be cooling off a bit from the day. Because if you've ever been to Omaha, anybody listening, if you're making your trip, it gets very, very hot in those stands. Make no doubt. Omaha is not just, oh, it's further north, it's not going to be as hot. It's hot in Omaha. So just get ready. There's this thing called corn sweat. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it before, but it's a very real thing. Corn is a high producer of humidity, so it gets very warm and very humid all throughout that region. So just, it's going to happen.
I thought you meant corn sweat, like meat sweats, like don't eat too much corn before you go in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, no corn before you get there.
Gross.
There's plenty of it around.
But yeah, so that's I'm not going to do a full breakdown of the other ones.
Sure.
Honestly, I think UT can handle FSU.
I think they can.
I think UVA and UNC will be fun just because since they're in the same conference, you know, they've seen each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing they played each other this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's a tight matchup. I mean, you've got, yeah, North Carolina playing Virginia. I'm going to look that up real quick.
Well, see, and I think it's a tight matchup with us too, just because, like we were saying, you know, Ole Miss has done it. You don't have to be great all year. You just have to be great when it matters. And Florida is finding their groove. You don't love to see. You don't want to face off against the team that's really hot. But I mean, we just went 2-0 against Oregon. You know, again, we're not. We're kind of in that same measure.
Mm-hmm.
As far as recent success, I tell you what, the Kentucky and T-State, this kind of goes back to it. There's no clear-cut favorite. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like Kentucky and NC State could be great. Is Tennessee rattled at all because Evansville beat them up a little bit?
I doubt it, especially when you win game three as big as you did. But still, we've seen with Tony Vitello teams that there's a very consistent frustration that can permeate when they don't play well, and it can snowball a bit on them.
It's a lack of I think it's a combination of lack of mental grit and fortitude, sure, and a little bit of immaturity. Like your club is what your manager is. That's what we see out of A&M with Schloss. Mm-hmm. I think NC State, watching them and just hearing the interviews, I think that's a true statement with them as well. Well, and with Tennessee, I think this goes back to I think they lack, we've seen them. Yeah, we've seen him perform under Vitello. I think they lack a little bit of the kind of mental fortitude, maybe that a Schloss coach team or NC State. You know, the way they play, you know, hearing his interviews, I think that team mirrors them, and I think they get to be a little bratty. Tennessee, I mean, not NC State, obviously. Sure. They showboat, which I don't really care about. That's fine. They're really kind of brazen, but they don't do well when they're down, and yeah, we've seen that out of them.
Mm-hmm. Now we've seen that with a lot of the levels of diversity that they've faced in the past, and you know, maybe, yeah, and well, you've made it to the dance for the third time in 4 years, so you know what the expectation is. They know what they're doing.
Yep.
So no,
and look, you can't take away the fact that the program's incredibly successful. It's just those tiny moments that we've seen. You know, when they do face a little bit of adversity, sometimes they do have a little bit of issues. And again, it directly stems from your coach. I'm not saying Tony Vitello is not a good coach. I think that'd be insane to say that he's not a good coach.
Yeah.
His demeanor and attitude is just a little bit different than some of the other coaches.
So a couple of quick notes. So Virginia did play North Carolina Virginia. Virginia wins the series. They win the first two games 11-4, 7-2. NC State wins game three, 12-7. And that's, you know, a road matchup at that point. So, you know, these two teams know each other and they just played each other back in April. So they're ready to rock and roll. And that's going to be a really interesting matchup.
I may not miss a single game in this World Series.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And don't overlook FSU.
Don't overlook any of these teams. Like, you have eight really good teams that are fairly balanced, which is that's unlike what we've seen at Omaha in the past. You know, you've had like maybe one, two teams that you know for sure, like the real strong candidates, and you've got maybe one or two that you're like, okay, yeah, they made it. Good on them. Like, that was us in 2017. Like, yeah, we snuck in, we're there, but we weren't ever going to match up well, and we didn't. But, you know, you have certain years like that will take place where maybe we're just not. Maybe, you know, you do have a little bit lower caliber teams that make it through the field.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking good.
You either end up top heavy or you end up with like a Cinderella that you're expecting to lose, but it's fun to watch anyways. I think this field is a ton of fun this year. Yeah, I think it is a ton of fun.
And it is pretty wild that it's a grand total of two conferences that are represented, 4-4.
You know, and I think they asked about this. I think there's Ben McDonald where I think they might have asked him on the broadcast last night. Yeah. Like, is that good or bad for college baseball? Or right. No, it was last night on SVP. And is it good or bad for college baseball? I'm going to tell you, like, in the answer that I can't remember who it was that they brought on, but he was, he said, I don't know if it's good or bad. You know, it just is what it is. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care.
No, everybody has to win their games, man. At the end of the day, when you're at the end of the season, you know, not every team that was hosting was an ACC and an SEC team, you know, like everybody has that opportunity. You just have to take advantage of your situation, which unfortunately a lot of people didn't, you know, like we could have had Arizona in there, but they get swept out in two games in their regional, you know?
You know, in college football, the rankings matter so much more. You know, the rankings in baseball, it kind of matter because obviously when it comes around to seeding.
Right.
But you can't look at what's happened so far, starting with game one of the first regional, and tell me that the best teams didn't win.
Right, exactly.
And these aren't one-off games that they have to win. They have to go out and win regionals. They have to win series.
Well, and that's the fundamental difference between like a football and a baseball. Like football, it is week to week, one game. One opportunity. And as soon as that's done, that's what you're judged against for the rest of your season. It doesn't matter. If you lose that early game to somebody, if you're looking good late, they can still hold that loss against you a lot of the time. And they will continue to do so. But you don't see that as bad in baseball. Yes, you do have RPI. Yes, you do have all those things as far as seeding. But once again, the thing that we've talked about consistently and already mentioned once on this podcast, you just have to be hot at the end. And you've got four hot SEC teams, four hot ACC teams, and they are all ready to go.
I was gonna say, the way it is. They're all like chomping at the bit. Like seriously, I think it's going to be a fantastic World Series especially for baseball junkies.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing all the stories about everybody that makes the trip. It's a blast. I would certainly encourage you, if you have never been, by all means, go. It's such a great time. And the people of Omaha are just wonderful human beings. They will absolutely take care of you, support you. If you've got questions, they'll give you recommendations left and right. It's good people up there. And they love when people are in town for college baseball. And they all love it up there, too. So it really is, don't like to use the term, but like, you know, the mecca of college baseball in terms of you get there and you're like, ah, this is what it's supposed to feel like all the time.
Yeah. And I've never been, but that's definitely it's on my radar for me to go to Omaha. But, just the joys of being able to walk around and seven other teams worth of fans being around and like just everybody's there for baseball.
Mm-hmm.
That trip is definitely on my radar.
Well, and the crazy thing is the amount of people that are going to show up from teams that are not even participating. Because you have the Mississippi State fans that go every year, the LSU fans that go every year, the Arkansas fans that go every year. I mean, you're going to have a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life. I remember when we came up and we're sitting in the outfield seats in 17 for the Louisville game. We rolled up in there, and the two guys behind us in the line were Long Beach State guys. But they go every single year. It's just part of their vacation.
Well, and I mean, it's the top of the mountain. You know, these are the teams that are playing the best at the end of the year. So, you know, in theory, you're going to get great competition. Obviously, what we've seen throughout the regionals and the supers is there may be some blowouts going both directions.
Sure.
I don't think you see that as often in Omaha again, just because the way the ballpark is, you know, you're not going to have teams hitting 8-9 dingers in a game.
No,
watch the very first game, they'll hit like a dozen and I'll just look like an asshole.
We had, you know, A&M, well, and obviously wind and everything, all the different factors. But if you look at like A&M back in 22, you know, when we blew out Texas 10-2, that's not a normal occurrence at Omaha. Like, yeah, I'm really glad we did it. And it was kind of a fun little thing that we can kind of hold over their head. It's like, well, you've never won a title. Yeah, well, you've never beaten us there. So how about that? But regardless, you know, that's not pointed at anybody directly, but at this stage of the game.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah, it might be. It's like, is it, though? It's one of my favorites. But yeah, here we are. You know, it is College World Series time. This is what we've been looking forward to all year. And, you know, we always hope at the beginning of the season that you make it this far.
Well,
and you're here.
It's another step. Getting to Omaha was not the goal. Never was the goal.
No.
It's one of the steps to your goal. So they've, you know, what's weird. And this is something really tiny. And I don't, and I'm probably just a weirdo about this. I love that we didn't dogpile.
Yes, yeah, same here, because it's like at this point, it's almost like this is the expectation.
Right. Like, look, go jump around and celebrate and everything. But same, like, yeah, a dogpile seems very final to me. You know, you dogpile when you win the World Series.
I agree. And we didn't, I'm pretty sure we didn't dogpile in 22 either. I yeah. think that's been the really interesting thing. Like, we haven't dogpiled last couple of times we've made the dance. And I'm okay with that, because this is a business oriented team, and we are moving forward with this absolute business trip going up to Omaha.
So, not to mention, Schloss might have told the team we've had enough injuries this weekend.
That's where my brain went. I was like, let's not hurt anybody in a dog pile. That seems like a bad plan.
Dude, those dog piles are the worst, man. Like, obviously not the same, but like my first or second game as a junior yell leader, when the fish came out and tackled me, I was like, how many are on top of me? Like, I couldn't breathe, man. Like, literally, I could not breathe. I could breathe enough to yell them to get the hell off of me. That was it.
So, so fun little aside. So a high school thing, I'm going to send it back years and years ago. So back in high school in New Mexico, the top dog in the division below us. So Carlsbad was always like 5A, 6A. Artesia below us was always like 4A, 5A, just always one division down. But we would play them every year because it was always a big rivalry. And, you know, so they called it Battle of Eddy County War, lots of different names. But every single time, yeah, we would play Artesia. Part of their pregame, whenever they come running on the field, you know, everybody's coming from the field house, team runs across, goes to the end zone, prays, and then goes to the sideline. That's what we do. That's what most teams do. Artesia, they come through and they dogpile at the 50-yard line. That is how they start their games. They do a dogpile at the beginning of the game, and it just sets the tone. Granted, this is a team that's won 30-some-odd state titles in New Mexico. They know what they're doing, obviously.
It's not crazy if it works.
It's only crazy if it doesn't work, and they have been doing it for years. So, literally, if you look up on Google the Artesia dogpile, you will see just – all these players, as soon as they hit the 50, just jumping and they make a huge pile out of it. It's kind of
funny.
That's
hilarious.
Yeah. And, you know, they're like super, like, especially at home, they wear bright orange, orange helmet, orange jersey, orange pants. It's just loud.
Looks like a big pile of traffic cones.
Exactly. It's exactly what it looks like. But then they'll turn around and whip you, even as a 5A or a 6A. So you've got to be on top of it. It's like, oh God, here they come.
Well, certainly hoping that this season ends in a dog pile.
That would be nice. And I'm sure we'll, like I said, we'll get back on this podcast next week and highlight first few rounds games, and hopefully have some positive things to talk about when we get around to that. That's going to be great.
Yeah, honestly, I love baseball. Yeah, baseball is my first sport. I'm sure I've said that before. Mm-hmm. I love college baseball. Another one of the sports where I've just kind of fallen more in love with that as opposed to the professional level. Even with the Stros, you know, success, Aggie baseball is just different. When Ags aren't in Omaha, I watch it, but just kind of from a distance. But man, when the Ags are in Omaha, I am like, this is literally like waiting on Christmas morning. I need it to be Saturday.
Yeah. Like I said, when it comes to like, when we're not there, my brain immediately devolves into, all right, who do I not want to win this whole thing right now? And I'm just going to actively root against those teams. And then however it washes, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously this time around, you know, you've absolutely have a dog in the fight. So you might as well go out there and have yourself a time and yeah, watch it around town, be excited for it. I mean, A&M baseball right now, as far as the exposure we just received this past weekend, I mean, you are really reinforcing that A&M is a place that people want to come play and want to come support, and it's been incredible. Whereas in previous seasons, people always love to highlight the attendance numbers, right? And they'll say, well, Mississippi State, you know, gets 11,000-12,000 a game. Ole Miss gets that many. You know, South Carolina's normally up there, LSU. And I'm like, yeah, they have big stadiums and they can put a lot of people in there. But I will take 6,100 Aggies over a stadium full of Tigers or a stadium full of Bulldogs. It doesn't matter to me, because at the end of the day, it's the quality of the fans that add to the experience. And when you just add that many more with the outfield seating, which we saw, and Aggie Alley, oh my goodness, how much fun was that?
Well, and this kind of ties into something we talked about earlier in the year, really has kind of pertained to softball to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, this much larger platform of streaming services, right, is exposing the game and exposing, you know, schools to so many more people and so many more eyeballs. And I think that as much as ESPN has really leaned into the softball coverage,
yeah,
they have also done that with baseball. I don't think we've noticed it because we've had the SEC Network, but they have really leaned into it. And even from like a Sports Center point of view, their social media being all over it.
Yep.
And so when you have something like, you know, when we start getting to the regionals and super regionals, guys like Tom Hart will retweet out the ball five that got to like 11 or whatever. You know, they put that out there so you have that exposure. But then you put us on a national stage and something like Caden Kent happens. And when something like that happens, every outlet will pick it up, every single one. And it gets absolutely blown across social media. So when you take that increased exposure, you add in how the MLB draft has changed.
Yeah.
You know, it's shorter. There's less rounds. You know, compact that along with NIL. You're seeing, and Shalasa said this, you're seeing more quality players go to college instead of dragging around on a bus for the next 4 years in the minors.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the amount of money opportunities you can make in college right now versus being a minor league player straight into the system, it's insane. Like, there's so many more benefits to being in college right now. In terms of your development, you're playing against good talent. Yeah, I mean, not all the time. You know, you're going to be facing your average Tuesdays from, you know, an SFA or a whoever. But, you know, throughout the course of the season, you're playing against SEC teams. And those SEC teams are forming MLB players.
Yeah.
And you're going to have players across the board. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, I love the fact that DeLoach made the dance. You know, he is now up at the bigs playing with the White Sox. Made his debut. And we're starting to see more position players, which we've always been a big pitching school in terms of like the MLB. But now we're getting position guys that are getting a lot more playing time, and it's starting to grow, and you're seeing so much better exposure. It's incredible.
Well, you know, unlike even probably 5 years back, you know, you look at these recruiting classes and you just say, well, he's not going to make it to campus. He's not going to make it to campus. You know, and these kids are having this decision is a little bit harder for these kids now,
yeah.
You know, because unless you're a first rounder, maybe top half of the second round, you've got a very legitimate decision to make. And quite frankly, even if you're a second rounder, you might have a decision to make in the sense of, still, I'm going to end up in the minors for a year or two slugging through. Why don't I just add 1 year to that, end up with a degree?
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, obviously develop myself. You know, you're 17, 18 years old. You haven't even physically matured yet. So getting into that weight room, not having to do, get honest, just the grind of being a minor leaguer.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention the facilities, especially what we're starting to see across the SEC, what we're about to have with this expansion. I mean,
yeah.
The facilities are incredible. And the development, I mean, the fact that we poached Max Wiener from the Mariners, like, that tells you a lot.
And not just about us, but just college baseball in general.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's just so much to be said for the growth of this game and softball. You know, we talked about it all year.
Yeah.
And all it does is make it better. It just makes a better product.
Yeah.
That's all of this stuff ends up doing. So, you know, when you look at these recruiting classes and you go, all right, we might lose one to the draft. Then you look at the talent there. You're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, what we're going to be able to inject possibly on day one with the kids coming in.
Well,
and so I think there's just so much opportunity for this baseball team to continue on the trajectory. Like you said, add in the new facilities and the new stadium. I don't care. Like, I really do care that they keep it at Olsen.
I agree.
How that works, I don't know. You know, I think you extend the decks all the way down the baselines.
I'd be cool with that. Yeah.
For starters. I think like one of the renderings I love seeing was the raised wall out in left field, you know, bring it in and make it higher kind of thing.
Right.
And put seat decks up on top of that. You don't have a ton of room in Aggie Alley, but I was thinking about this with my dumb engineering brain. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, if you really run it back almost to the wreck, you can leave that road with a tunnel underneath it. You'll have room for the bullpen. You'll have room for the service road. You can run those decks up and they'll have access, you know, into the, you know, around the foul pole. So you don't have like, you know, how section 12 is its own entity, its own entrance kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, being able to tie all that stuff in. I would love for them to keep it on site. I don't know how that, I don't know what that looks like. And I don't know how big of a nightmare that is, but yeah, I did not do COSI and no. I'm not a civil engineer. So, no. But I think there's plenty of opportunity on site to build what we want to build.
Yeah. And I think that's the way we need to keep it, because Olson Field at Bluebell Park is a special place. And yeah, you know, we talked about it before when it's come down to, you know, the attendance numbers this year. I mean, we averaged the attendance over the capacity of the stadium this season,
yeah.
Which we've never done that. As far as like going back since we've been keeping stats, I've never seen us have numbers like that.
Yes, the fire marshal's been on vacation,
I guess. Well, and it doesn't account for, you know, section 12. It doesn't account for that other bleacher they set up out there. Like there are, like, whatever the official attendance numbers were this past weekend, they were not accurate, because you had to have at least 9,000 yeah. people out there, if not.
It was 10. Banging.
It was insane. There were so many people out there. And you know, and to your point about the exposure thing, I just saw a TikTok the other day, yesterday, that included a really neat little thing for me. It was an outfield angle from a camera phone in section 12 of Caden Kitt's Grand Slam. But the music they put over the top of it is from Moneyball. It's the band This Will Destroy You. It's one of their songs called Rio Grande that plays throughout the entire movie. It's kind of like the overture of the movie.
Yeah.
And they played it during I can't even remember the guy's name. The guy that hit the home run in the 19th game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was they just played that. That was a really kind of neat thing. But it just adds additional exposure. It makes people go, oh yeah, no, A&M's a awesome place to play. The fans are great and the facilities are cool and all these other things. I mean, I love where we're at on that front right now. So even if we don't walk away with this thing and with a trophy in hand, even if that doesn't happen, we've seen a lot of success this year in terms of the direction we're moving.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I think you have to have success on the diamond. Yeah, yes. None of this matters if you're not playing well. But this is why we brought Schloss in. By the way, it was Hatteberg for the A's. Hatteberg,
that's who it was, yep.
Yeah, the guy that they had to teach.
I couldn't put a name quite on it in that moment, but yeah.
But we're seeing that success, multiple trips to Omaha in just a few years. So this is, again, this is why we brought him in.
Yep.
And we got to keep him happy.
Yes.
And I think every Aggie on the planet will be happy enough to reach in their pockets a little bit and make this happen. I just, my two cents, I really wish they'd keep it at Olson.
Yeah, that's my one thing. And as we get a little bit closer and they actually start kind of shelling out what the plans are going to look like, obviously we'll discuss it, what the fan situation looks like if they move people around, which I wouldn't be shocked if they did a little bit of that, but I'd be curious to see what all takes place when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
So.
But in the meantime, we got to wait until Saturday night.
Yeah.
But that means on Friday, you get to watch Carefree Baseball, the left side of the bracket.
Exactly. And that's my favorite kind of baseball, is Carefree baseball. I can sit there and just watch two teams and enjoy it.
High level Carefree baseball.
Yes.
I don't care to watch them boot the ball around the outfield, the infield.
Well, I will say this, though, like when college baseball first starts back up and, you know, that opening weekend takes place, that first Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there's games being played every single day. And I'll log in and watch, you know, Alabama playing Alabama A&M, or I'll be watching, you know, whoever playing Stetson or whatever. You know, I think that's kind of fun on a Tuesday, you know, especially before we play. Because those games are going all day, too. That's kind of the funny part. But
yeah, I know. But this is a lot of baseball at an elite level. So I'll be tuned in. Like, I'll be completely locked in. Podcast next week will probably be really nerdy, considering how much baseball I'm gonna watch.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I don't really have much on my schedule outside of, I am planning on Friday. Me and my friend Ashley, we're gonna go down to the river over there in New Braunfels and go float for a bit. I'm gonna get back up here in time to catch some of the stuff going on at the Chicken, because it is the 50th anniversary, 50th birthday party of the Dixie Chickens. So if you're in town, lots of artists playing out there, all Aggie artists. So go out and support them. That'll be a lot of fun. Our buddy Dub Miller will be out there.
Yep.
So I text Zaggy song. Woo!
George Bush 100th anniversary. You know, would have been his 100th birthday this year. So they're doing that stuff out of the George Bush Library.
Robert Earl Keen and Lyle Loveder.
Yeah, they're playing out there. There's a ton to do this weekend. There's a lot of country music between the Chicken, George Bush Library, and George Strait.
Yep. There's a lot of musical opportunities this weekend in town. So go check out some music. There's plenty of it. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I love the fact that we're doing this George Strait concert. And that's something I wanted to kind of touch on there for a second. Was with this happening now, and I love the fact that it's happening, I would love to see A&M open up the door a bit and allow more in the spring.
Well, and I think what we saw, so the Mexico-Brazil game, turns out it was a smashing success.
Yeah, I mean, 85,000 sold in an incredibly fun game, too.
For a friendly, for a match that literally doesn't matter. So that's one thing where non-soccer Aggies have to understand. Putting 85,000 in a stadium for a match that doesn't matter, that's a pretty good stinking number.
Huge number.
Yeah, I think already 32nd all-time for an international match attendance.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the first time we did it.
Yeah.
So you have that. Obviously, we got George Strait coming up. I think the success of the Mexico-Brazil match is enough. But I think the logistics of the George Strait concert will be huge, because, you know, obviously with seating down on the field, I think it was like 120,000.
It's going to be 115, 120, because at absolute worst, they're also opening up $45 standing room only tickets because of overwhelming demand. So you're talking, there's going to be a ton of people there.
Yeah, so this will be real tough with logistics. I think the pay for parking in the neighborhoods went over like a fart in church. There were some people pretty pissed off about that. I'd be pretty pissed off, too, if I had to pay to park in front of the house that I'm already paying for.
Right, on the roads that my tax is already paid for, but I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that at all.
No, but still.
So if you can get through this one, because this is a real big one, right? Like, this, as far as just logistics inside the building, it's bigger than any football game we've had.
No question. I mean, you have a high-profile guy coming in. And
this will be the biggest event we've ever had, Kyle. Yeah. So if you can pull this off, then this stuff needs to happen more often in the spring and in the summer. It absolutely has to. Mm-hmm. You got this beautiful building, this cathedral for football that can be used for so many other things. And now we prove that we can use it for soccer.
Yeah.
And we're going to prove that we can use it for an absolute headliner concert.
Yeah.
At that point, you have to start marketing this as some sort of destination location.
I agree.
You know, for these kind of alternate events, right?
Yep.
I was thrilled that the match went as well as it did.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I got my fingers crossed that George Strait will go off with as few hitches as possible.
Yeah.
I'd
be curious to see, because we did see, you know, with as well as the soccer match went, I would be curious, like, they've floated this idea in the past, but like, let's say Houston comes along and gets, the Olympics sometime in the near future. If Houston gets the Olympics, the way that they tend to do soccer matches is they will outsource those to other stadiums around the region. Kyle Field becomes an option for that.
It does. Yeah, with capacity, it being an Olympic match, and that's showing that we can pull it off. Again, I don't know what the standards are relative to how much room has to be on the side, but if Mexico and Brazil were okay with playing how the pitch fit on Kyle, then I can't imagine – there'd be an issue with it, you know, at Olympic level, which I don't know, that's kind of pipe dreaming, but the reality is it's there.
Yeah.
And we proved it can be there. So I love it. I am all in for events on Kyle. If there's got to be a drop dead date in the summer, 'cause we got to get the turf ready, I support that 100%, because quite frankly, let's not forget that we did build it for college football.
Of course. But like I said, I think especially with how light the schedule is around town in the spring outside of baseball and softball, I mean, there's no reason in my head why you shouldn't be able to host a lot of games, or not games, but concerts. Absolutely.
Both.
Yeah, both. Yeah. I'd be down with soccer matches out there for sure.
Host a Houston Dynamo Austin FC match.
Ooh, big MLS match on a neutral site. I wouldn't hate that. Huh. That's an interesting thought.
You're welcome, A&M. That's a fantastic idea. That just popped out the top of my head. Boy, I'm on it, doggone it.
Yeah, they might run and take that as well. That's a good idea, man. That's a good idea.
Halfway.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't disagree. I think that'd be really cool. And I mean,
MLS doesn't pull a ton in, but I think you have enough people here in town from Houston and from Austin. Yeah. Whether Aggies want to admit to it or not, the current student body are a lot bigger soccer fans than Aggies have ever been.
Oh, well, we as a society are bigger soccer fans than we ever have been because of the exposure of the game. Thanks, NBC, really. Because without NBC really embracing, in particular, for the Premier League, it didn't open up the door for a lot more people to get invested in international game, but also what was going on in Spain, what's going on in Germany, you know, all these other places. It really opened up the game. So, and that was hard to believe that was 10 years ago. You know?
Yeah, with ESPN taking like Bundesliga and La Liga, and they get like the champions, and then NBC with their Peacock USA platform, they get the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes people. I think those that are newer to soccer that got exposed kind of through that understand that the MLS quality isn't as good, but it's a live match you get to go watch.
Yeah, well, and not to mention, let's say maybe. I mean, it would be a tough sell. It'd be a really tough sell because, you know, Houston would prefer to just play the game in Houston. But if the Dynamo, if you had like a Dynamo hosting like Inter Miami with Messi in there.
Oh, that'd be sick.
That would be incredible. I mean, see Messi play at Kyle Field.
I'm sure you could cut a deal. I mean, because what for the match, we just got concessions, right? We didn't get ticket sales.
I don't think we did, no.
Yeah, so you come up with some sort of split for the Dynamo for ticket sales, you'll sell out Kyle. It's Messi.
Well, especially if Messi's involved. Because, I mean, yeah, it would be a home match for the Dynamo, but let's face it, there'll be a bunch of just scattered fans there that are frankly there just to see Messi do what Messi does, and why not?
Just to see him in person. Yeah. I mean, look, soccer fanatics are fanatics.
So, fun story in 2018. Fun story in 2018. So I went and watched USA and Copa America play against Argentina in Houston. And got to see Messi score the second goal off a free kick right in front of my face. And the funny thing was, everybody around me had their cameras out because they knew it was coming.
Yeah.
I didn't film. I just wanted to see it. And sure enough.
Yeah, he's generational.
Incredible talent.
I mean – so if that, like, I would probably buy an entire row of seats.
Yeah.
if just as Messi were coming, I'm from Houston, but if you love football, you have to love Messi, and it's okay if you think Ronaldo's, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
But he's one of the greatest talents to ever play the game. So yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be absolutely insane because you talk to, I mean, what does the Dynamo Stadium hold? 40?
20,000, 25, maybe.
Small?
Yeah, it's not a huge ball. It's not like, a huge.
We'll give you all the ticket sales up to 40. We'll double your ticket sales. We'll just take the rest and we'll pack in 100,000.
Yeah. And it would be awesome. It would be so cool.
All right. That's enough pipe dreaming.
Yeah, that's fun though. Oh, man. What a fun time of the year. What's your week looking like? What do you got coming up?
Busy, busy. I've just got a whole lot of stuff under contract that I'm working with. So, and it's coming off a last week, short week, I'm still playing a little catch up, quite frankly, but summertime it's busy for real estate. But it's also really good time. Like it kind of comes in waves. And so kind of when you're in the down cycle, it's a great time to start really resetting for the fall.
Yeah.
And so when I don't have something to do, I still have something to do.
But
we're trying to finalize our Scotland trip. Reached out to the West Ham guys over across the pond. Set up a dinner. I'm gonna have dinner down to the Bolin pub. The Bolin.
Nope.
Grab dinner there, and I don't know. It it's kind of in flux because I had somebody say, don't bother going to Dublin. But I'm like, man, I kind of feel like I should go to Dublin, though.
I would go to Dublin. I love Dublin.
Instead of you're going to Dublin to go to the rest of Ireland, right on. So that part of my trip might be changed a little bit. Like go to Dublin, then maybe, you know, go outside. I want to go to Dublin. I don't know.
I would say go to Dublin and definitely go check out Kilkenny because Kilkenny is a wonderful small town. It's only about an hour away.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've got that on the radar. And so we'll jet set around a little bit while we're over there. Going to go to London. My daughter's never been. Megan and I have been, but my daughter's never been. So we'll take her to London and do some touristy stuff. And none of us have been to Ireland or Scotland.
I still need to go to London. It's funny. I've been all around. I've done France. I've been in Paris. I've been in Rome. I've been, across Italy. I've been obviously in Ireland, all over Scotland. I never ended up in London. I don't know why. We just never ended up there.
London's cool.
I want to go.
I think it was a lot more cool having a contact there.
Yeah.
I got to see that. I didn't do, when I went to London, I didn't do anything touristy. I didn't go to Buckingham Palace. I didn't see the London Eye. I didn't see the Bridge, nothing. Big Ben, none of it.
Right.
I went and saw like where the old Boleyn was, mm-hmm. like Upton Park.
Oh, yeah.
I went to, what are they? Arsenal Fan TV Studio.
Yeah.
Like, so I got a super crazy kind of look at London. But yeah, so this time we'll do a little more touristy stuff. Go see the guards and all that other crap.
I will say to this day, one of my favorite videos that you ever filmed was with you up at Goodison Park on that corner kick when West Ham takes the lead over Everton. I mean,
that was great. One of the greatest moments ever, dude. And it happened on our end. And the dynamic of being in an older park like that.
As an away fan, even.
Yeah. In the away section, they've got the net in between us and the home fans, so we don't throw bottles at each other. And
right,
there will be some stadium stop bys.
I
mean, there's what, six London clubs right now in the Premier League.
I think that many, yeah. I
mean, five or six. So yeah, I'll probably swing by all of them and just take pictures.
Well, definitely get a good picture of Craven Cottage for me because I've always had a bit of a soft spot for those boys up there at Fulham.
I'm the same way. Yeah, and I'll go check out AFC Richmond. I mean Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that's like Crystal Palace.
Well, and I'm going to try and squeeze out to Wrexham.
Yeah, but might as well. I mean, it's not a bad little park they got out there. And, I mean, they did just kind of get themselves into a pretty cool position. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought that'd be fun just to kind of swing out there and do that. But, finalizing that trip plan. So that, that's chews up a lot of my day because once I started daydreaming, I started dreaming about Scotland.
Fair enough. Love Scotland. It was good people up there, especially in Edinburgh. That's where we're hanging out primarily. But this week, we're pretty light. Like I said, we're picking up shows left and right. I will say this for our booking agent. He has just been crushing it. He's been
earning his pay.
Yeah, kind of a good deal. But, yeah, I mean, we've got the next round of shows, which is not going to be this next weekend, but the following week. So I'll touch on them again. But we're going up to Amarillo and then back-to-back nights, Kane's Ballroom up there in Tulsa. So be sure to get ready for those. We are announcing the album on the 12th when we're going to be playing out at Floors. We may drop a single that day, too. So keep an eye out for that. But a big one to keep in mind, of course, for all you College Station people, Hurricane Harry's August 23rd. Get ready for that. That's going to be a ton of fun. I cannot wait to go. So should be a lot of fun. But yeah, album's done. We're just waiting on those mixes to come back. I am chomping at the bit for that too. So should be a lot.
All right. Well, now I've got to go keep myself busy until baseball starts in 3 days.
Well, beat the ever-living, ever-loving Compound Complex hell out of Florida. Let's get ourselves off on the right foot. And let's just go out there and do what we do.
Yeah.
Just plan, baby. Take them.